Hello everyone, welcome to Computer Science E75 section with the live video feed. So just a couple of quick announcements. So today in section we'll be going over, of course, a lot of the stuff from this week's lecture, and I'll be actually doing the first half, talking mostly about XML and XPath and that sort of thing, and then in the second half, Cato, another TF here, will actually come up and we'll talk about sessions and so on. And so do realize that next week there's no lecture on Monday because of the holiday, and so this basically gives us 2 weeks of sections related to PHP. So we're going to go a little bit slower, perhaps, because David did go over a lot of stuff in this last lecture. And so, of course, if you do have questions or concerns, don't hesitate to ask away. We're certainly here for you, not just to listen to myself talk. So PHP, one of the things that we are doing is from the sections page, from the sections page, the staff are creating section notes, and so you can use this. We'll be using this as sort of a guide to go over sections, and so this is certainly a way for you to take a look and see some of the stuff that we are talking about here. So you can download it off the page. I happen to already have done that, and you can see it here. So first, today we're going to talk about XML, or the extensible markup language. And this is really, it may look very similar to XHTML, and indeed it's just the more general version of that, whereas XHTML is used to design web pages. This is just used as some way to frame data, just generically. And so it's not the same sort of idea as XHTML, where you have to have specific tags. So for example, in XHTML, what are some of the tags we have to have? Just easily blurt some out.
HTML.
Okay, HTML, yeah, body. You know, you might probably want a link with an A tag, or an A element, that is. But with XML, you don't really have to do that. And so with this, you can store your data in an organized fashion, but really how you store it is completely up to you, is completely up to your design. And certainly, there may be better ways to do it than others, but there's certainly no right or wrong way. And this is one of the things that the first project, or project one, not the first project, project one wants you to do, is to try to figure out how to model this data, how to model that menu from Three Aces. And so we're not going to touch exactly on that. Instead, we have something else here. So this is kind of like a sushi menu, for example, and then we'll also take a look at some other XML documents that I work with on some of my own web pages. And so first let's just take a look at this XML document here. So I kind of already gave it away, but what is the whole point of this XML document? What do you think it does? Yeah, it's like a sushi menu, so you can either pick what are some of the fish that we have up here. Tuna and squid, right. So one of the great things, or one of the things that you should really definitely do in XML, is to properly indent everything, and that'll make it a lot easier to read. And so even if you came into this class knowing very little about XML, or knowing only what David told you on Monday, you can already get kind of an idea of the data that's being represented here. And that's one of the great things about XML and what David was advocating. So if you can make if you can represent your data with XML as simply or as easily, not only will it make it easier for you to look at or to modify, but it'll also make it easier for your code to be able to parse data out of it. So give this a good amount of thought. And so you can see that we have a couple of elements here. So this whole element here is basically just a sushi. It's defining some sort of sushi menu. And we have two types of fish, whether or not it's available. And we can see that here under the squid, it's not available. Its origin, which is fun, actually, more of a fun thing for a menu than perhaps necessary, and the various variations that you can have for each. So how do you use this then in PHP? And it's actually really, really easy. With PHP 5, they came out with a new command called simple XML element, and this basically is just a way of PHP reading an XML file, right here, this is reading an XML file, but you can also just input the XML directly into this command. It's certainly easier to put it in a separate file because then you don't have to edit your PHP every time. But it represents the XML in memory, sort of like that tree with the linked list that David was talking about before. And it makes it really, really, really easy to access and to access the data that you have in your XML document. So here, let's just break it down. We have the file name that's called sushi.xml. The file get contents command basically just reads the file's contents. It does exactly what it says it does, and it puts the contents of that file into the simple XML elements. And so at the very end, then all of that data is put into that XML variable. So we actually have here a representation of what this data structure would look like in memory if you were to print it out. And it's basically just a set of arrays. It's just like an array of arrays of arrays of arrays and so on and so forth. And so it makes it very easy for you to reference each of these particular attributes or data that's in the XML itself. So moving on, how do we actually access this data? Well, there's a couple of ways to do it. You can access it directly just with just by referencing a particular element. But one of the easiest ways, or one of the best things to do, perhaps, is to actually iterate through each of these or each of the elements that you have just to find a particular set of data. And so this for each command is actually just a loop. And all it's saying here, for each XML fish as the variable fish. And what that does, if we were to scroll up back to our XML document, we see that we have two fish, or we've declared two types of fish, the tuna and the squid. And what that for each loop is saying is to iterate through. And so so the first iteration, it'll go through with the contents of this first fish. So all of this data will be put into that fish variable, and then the contents or the commands that you put in that loop will be executed. When all of that is finished, then it will rerun, but with this time the second set of fish. And so you can imagine that just outputting some data from this is quite easy. So for example, you can just use a simple echo command to echo out this fish is called, and then a fish, and then reference it like you would a PHP array, fish.name. But realize something here, and that is that this data, the fish name, is actually, if you remember, an attribute. Yeah, right here. And so you can't actually reference the data, for example, from this available tag through that same sort of PHP array. We actually have to do something completely different. Well, not completely different, but just it's just an extra step. And so So I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but if you see that the results of this for each command are actually here, where it says if we run this, it basically just outputs this fish is called tuna, this fish is called squid. And so now if we wanted to pick out some of the elements that are nested within that fish data, then we see that we can access it with that, basically that arrow operator. And so it becomes very easy to pick, for example, the origin, arrow origin, you'll be able to get that data out. And so what do you think this would output? For each XML fish as fish, echo this fish hails from the fish origin. So remember, we have two types of fish back up here. So what would it output? That loop. North Sea. Yep, and then on the next line, it would output Mediterranean Sea. And in fact, if you were to type this out into a PHP file and try it out yourself, which I encourage you to do, that is exactly what you would get. So you can actually keep going down the path with this sort of idea. And so you can see that, so here we want to find the price of one of the variations of the fish. And so for every nested element that you have, you can just reference it with that arrow that I was talking about just before. And so you can echo out the fish data from variations to the first variation, because it's basically just an array here. So if you'll let me scroll back up, you'll see that you actually have here the variations element, but within that you have two elements named variation, right? So you have an array of this type, where the 0 references this first one and 1 references the second one. And you can see that it has a sub-element of price. And so if we were to output that particular code here, that, oops, is that too far? That's way too far. Okay, so if we were to output this particular code here, all it would do is, for again, if this code was in that for each, it would loop twice and it would find the price of each. So any questions about referencing data, anything like that? Okay, so I just want to show really quick. So again, as many of you know, because I keep using it as an example in this section, is this other class that I'm teaching, and the website that we have up for this class. And in fact, it uses a lot of the techniques that we're talking about, especially early on. And so one of the things that I pointed out earlier is that if you actually click on the image, it actually cycles through a set of images. And so the way that I represented this, because you'll notice that not only does the image change, but also all of the colors change, was with an XML document. So some of the things that were changed, like I said, were the image, the links, the background color. So we have a number of things that were changed. So what is one way that we could represent this data in an XML document?
Each one of them will be like a presentation. And inside the presentation, you have like the CSS code.
Right.
And you have the address of the file.
Okay, so you have, okay, so we could call each one a presentation. In this case, I call it a theme. So there's different themes for this particular website. And so then I would start out my XML document with a themes element. And so you suggested that I could use I could create different theme elements and reference a different CSS file. But instead, what I did was actually go as simple as possible and just put directly in the XML the color code for each of these things. So for example, this defines the photo name. So this photo element within the theme. So again, I said I have a set of themes in the element theme, and I have one theme here with an ID of 0. So you can imagine that for every theme that I have, I would just increment the ID. And the reason that I did this is that down the line, there was actually one ID that I didn't want to display. I ended up not wanting to do it, and so I was able to just get rid of that by modifying that. But then, just for some future reference, I might want to do a title or a description that might describe the image or in some way. Maybe if I wanted to create like a theme chooser, for example. Yes?
Is there a particular reason why you chose to make the ID a child of theme instead of making it, say, an attribute of themes, saying like equals 0?
So is there a reason why I made it a child of theme, or the ID a child of theme rather than an attribute? Not specifically. This was probably one of the first XML documents I made, and so at the time I wasn't yet very familiar with the attributes, and so I just decided to make it a child, but you could very well implement it just as easily as an attribute rather than a child. And in fact, that may be a better implementation, just because as when you work with it in PHP, you might be able to reference it more easily. But indeed, this works for me, and in the end, as long as it works and is consistent within your own site, then even just a simple design change like that shouldn't make that big of a difference. So anyway, I have an author here, which implies that I might have themes that are created by other authors. Yes?
Sorry, can you just, for one of them, just say if you used his example, what you would have written?
Oh, okay. So what would I have written if I decided to use it as an attribute? So right here, the ID element is a child of theme. That's because it's within the theme. But instead, if I had created a different themes document, a themes XML file, but used the theme or used the ID as an attribute, that would be literally just like an attribute in XHTML, where you set the attribute to be ID equal to, and then in quotes, the value of that attribute. This is essentially the same, and it probably reduces some redundancy or reduces some typing. But again, in this case, it doesn't really matter, I don't think. Any other questions before we move on? Okay, so like I said, the author one, that kind of implies that there might be a way for me to add other authors or to have themes that are authored by other people, and that's certainly something that might be planned for the future in the site. But then you can see that there's an element for photo, the page, the content, the highlights, and the text. And the text is just the text color. The highlight would be the, if we go back here, it's the lines that are around the image and that highlight all of these, the boxes in the CSS. The page is the page background color, and the content is the background color of the content. And so in this case, after I was working with it for a little bit, I realized that I wanted the all of the links to be the exact same color as the highlights. And so as I may show you a little bit later, it actually was a very, very simple change, because all I had to do was just reference in the CSS file the XML element that says highlight for that, and then just get rid of the separate element that I had for the link. So here we have a whole bunch of IDs, but you get the general idea of this type of this data that I was able to represent with XML. But first, I actually have to say that before I knew XML, I knew MySQL. And so we'll be learning about MySQL starting in the next lecture, coming 2 weeks from now. But why might a database, or why might an SQL database, be kind of overkill for this data set?
Because it's got a simple and straightforward organization with, and it goes light on relationships.
Right, yeah, it's very simple, straightforward data set of data. There's not a lot of relationships. But also, it's just very, very limited. I have something like 5 or 6 themes only, and so there's no reason for me to have all of that overhead, like David was talking about, just all the extra processing required to use a database. This is certainly fine for an XML file, and that's one of the reasons why we use XML for a lot of the CS75 pages, just because there's no need to put it into a database. That if you have much more data, then you might want to put it in a database, but it really becomes your call, I think. And it certainly seems a lot easier for the server to just read a short file rather than to process an entire database. So let's take a look then at what it looks like when, or how I reference all of this data. And so if you remember, I had referenced in the web page a couple of style sheets. So let's just take a quick look at this, the page source. So I hope it's legible there, but you can see at the top I have 2 style sheets. I have a styles.css and a colors.php. And so if you remember from a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about, in the first section, CSS and XHTML, I showed you only the styles.css style sheet. And that's because that all that contained was just the setup or the layout of the page. And all colors does is just a PHP file that parses the XML and returns it as what it, so it tricks it so that the browser thinks it's returning basically a CSS style sheet. And frankly, there's some problem with a number of browsers because it basically thinks you're posting data to it. And so especially with IE, if you try to do a trick like this and you're going backwards and forwards through pages, it'll give you that annoying error that says this page is expired, you have to do all of this stuff. And so with some help from David, we tracked down that the caching, it actually becomes a caching issue with IE and some other browsers. And so just by sending some random data to it, it's able to just re-get, it forces IE to re-request the colors.php file, and then that way it kind of eliminates that whole problem. But that's a whole other thing you probably needn't worry about, especially when this is kind of a hackish thing to do. But let's see what happens then if I actually go to this web page here. So even though this is a PHP file, you see that it outputs what I have here as CSS. And all it outputs is just the color for the background tag, for the background color of the body, through the header, all of the borders around the header, etc. And so, but realize again that there's no layout in this particular page. And so that way I'm able to separate the colors from the layout. Yes, you had a question.
Oh, that's right. That's in a style tag, a style element, right?
Yes. What do you mean?
The the reference to the PHP file that spits this out. So this is effectively bracketed by a style tag. If you go back to the previous file.
Mm-hmm. So back here in the previous file, in the index,
yeah.
And then under the source, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but it's not in the PHP tag. So I'm confused. I don't understand how this.
How are you?
How this is working.
Here, help me out. I'm not sure what you're confused about.
In styles dot CS.
So okay, so yeah, I have two style sheets here. Okay, so I have this is it's not really okay, so it can be a little bit confusing at first, but don't let it.
Here's my question.
Okay, sure.
Where does the PHP processing come into play? I didn't see any PHP code in colors.php, did I?
No, okay, so yeah, the PHP processing comes into play earlier than what you're seeing. Just like this index file is a PHP file, you don't see the PHP code. You see what the server has processed, and it spits out XHTML based on its process. It's based on the output or the end result. But instead of outputting XHTML, this PHP file outputs a style sheet. It just outputs a CSS style sheet.
What's the value of having that file be a PHP file? Where is the PHP code that gets executed to?
Okay, so what's the value of having this be a PHP file? I'll show you the code in just a little bit. But because actually this whole thing operates based on sessions as well. So as you navigate the page, it doesn't forget your color choice just because of the session. And so what it does is the PHP file that's referenced here just looks into the session to see which theme ID is basically stored in the session variable. And we'll talk all about sessions in the next half. But then it says, okay, the session variable has ID of 0, for example. It parses the XML file, that colors.php, parses the XML file, puts the data from the XML file into the style sheet and outputs that to the browser. And so the browser, even though it's a PHP file, the browser thinks that it's a style sheet.
I understand my confusion now. When we were looking at the colors style sheet, I thought we were looking at colors.php.
Mm. Oh, yes. Well, yeah, when we were looking at the color style sheets, we were looking at styles.php, but we weren't looking at the PHP code. We were looking at the output. And this is exactly the same thing as going to a PHP file in your web browser that outputs XHTML. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So now, perhaps what would have made that whole confusion go away to begin with would be to show you that this file to begin with. Oops, I haven't opened it yet. Okay, so this is colors.php. So here, so at the very beginning, this is actually part of the hack to try to overcome this cache issue. And certainly this was this came about through some research that David and I did about through php.net and also just some blog posts online, literally. But you'll notice that one of the headers that it sends is that the context or that the content type is text CSS, so that the browser thinks that it is a CSS document rather than an XHTML document. And so you do have to, if you're outputting anything other than XHTML, you will have to change the header. You can actually use PHP files to output, say, an image or something like that, but you'll have to, that's all sort of advanced stuff and certainly overkill for your project ones. But so you see, there's a session start. We'll talk all about that later on. Include once. So the theme basically, if you remember from includes, it basically sets some constants for me. It does a bunch of stuff. It has a bunch of regular functions that I use constantly. So this is that first part is basically just the hack for me in case there was an error for some reason. So let's. All right. So here. I actually did all of, I suppose I didn't do any of the XML processing in this colors.php file, but what I'm doing instead is just outputting the color from that I stored in the session variable. So this actually is less interesting than I suspected. So let's take a look instead at the include file, which hopefully will. Okay, here we go. So, all right, so the very first thing I did was load the XML. And you may notice this at sign in front of the simple XML load file. And what this does, that at sign suppresses error messages. So in case this fails for some reason, maybe this wasn't found, or maybe it, I don't know, maybe the file is corrupt or something like that. Instead of just literally throwing up and giving me a big error on my web page, what this will do is it will just ignore it, and then later on down the line I say that if there's no data available, I just revert to a default XML file, or I'm sorry, I just revert to a default theme, and so that way I don't have to worry about if this actually has an error, that the students will notice that there's actually something wrong with this site. So we'll skip this, all this session stuff. So right here, all I did was just get the number of themes that I have available to me. And so the way I did that is literally just to use the count function, and just count, which counts the size of the array. It just says, okay, remember that based here on theme that I had maybe 5 or 6 themes or so, and what that's going to do is set number of themes to that. So, excuse me, so sometimes if for whatever reason my XML file is empty or I just have deleted all of them, I need to cover that base and say that the number of themes here is 0. So you may not need to do this, but this was something that was necessary for me because the themes, without a theme, the pages look, well, they look really, really bad, and so I needed some way of gracefully dying, because the theme is really just sort of a flair thing rather than something that's essential for the page. So rather than just giving me a big deal or giving me a problem, I just had it revert to a particular theme. So let me make this bigger. Okay. So this is the code that we want to take a look at. For each theme, XML theme as theme. So what does this mean? So again, remember that we had, or in my XML document, I had it set up this way, such that theme was a child of the themes element, and I had a number of data here, or I had some set of data here, and closed that theme. And I had another theme, so on and so forth, for about 5 or 6 themes. And so what this is going to do is, for every theme, is going to iterate through and figure out some particular value. So what's happening here? So in this case, again, well, this is session stuff, and so I'm going to skip over this. Okay. That's kind of embarrassing. I forgot where all of this stuff happens in my document. So nope, that's not it. One last try. Nope. Oops. Okay. Okay. So, in fact, all I do here, if you remember that from the session variables, I'm able to spit out the data from this theme. And I guess this is kind of a cheat here, because now all I'm doing in this case is just taking all of the data from this. And so this probably explains why I didn't do an attribute for the ID and instead did it as a child, because now all of the children of the theme go into the session variable that colors.php file use and just literally spit it out back at the user. And so this makes an assumption that all of the data here is absolutely correct. Like it assumes that the color data is a 6-digit hexadecimal number. It assumes that it's not malformed in any way. It assumes that the image is actually points to a valid image. And so these are a number of things that could come back and bite me, but I just figured that since I'm the only one modifying this XML document, I can be responsible enough to make sure that all of the data in that document is absolutely correct. And so if you don't have that sort of control, then you'll certainly have to do some sort of error checking or something like that. But certainly, this is one of the ways that you can implement an XML file. So actually use another XML file in this for this website, and that is actually to define the pages. So you'll see here along the left side that there's actually five visible pages that people can select. And so there's home, which has this stuff, and then there's a set of lectures, there's some resources, etc., etc., etc. And so I actually use a pages.xml document to tell the server how many pages I have, which pages I want visible on the left side. And indeed, there are some pages that exist that I don't want to put on in the navigation. And so it is with a pages.xml file that I actually create this navigation bar that's here on the left side. It parses through. So, well, let's first just take a look at this pages.xml document. So back to this. And pages. All right, so now you'll see that, let's get rid of these themes, this whole theme XML. All right, so I start out with the site element, and I have the children of the site element are individual pages. And so you can see that I have a short title, a long title, whether or not the title is visible, and also the URL. And so in this case, all this does really is just define the navigation or the number of pages that exist in this site. And the reason that I did this was that I don't have separate PHP files, or I don't have separate pages for all of these different pages. I just use an index.php that parses through all of this information and spits out basically the correct data for each page. This was just a design choice on my end, and there are certainly downfalls to that, so that we may not even get into, but it is very convenient in that I don't have to copy-paste a whole new file or clutter up my my public HTML directory with a bunch of PHP files. I can just add some additional pages here to the pages.xml. And so if we scroll down, you'll notice that there are some that don't actually show up in the navigation. And I do that with this visible attribute that exists in the title attribute. And so you can see that I have, there's a typo there. It says 404 forbidden instead of 403 forbidden, that I've actually created these replacement error document pages. And so whenever the server has a 404 error or a 500 error or 403, it forwards it over to the index.html file or the index.php file, and it will show the results of these particular pages. But you'll see that if I were to change this visible attribute from 0 to 1, it would actually show up in the navigation bar, and that's not something that I wanted to do. So I had to have some way of telling the navigation to allow it or not. And so another element that I had was the URL. And so I actually wanted the option later on to be able, for whatever reason, to reference a URL that was not on the site. And so I defined this attribute called local. And so the local one basically just means that it's it should be a relative link rather than an absolute link. And so you'll see that in the PHP file, if it's a local one, it just appends the any data that it needs to. So
versus absolute link.
What's a relative versus an absolute link? So let's say you have a XHTML document with a couple of href links. So a relative one would be, for example, if you just did slash index.php. That's relative because that's relative to where the current page is. The first slash indicates that it's the root, but you can certainly even do something different than this. So, for example, you could have a folder name includes, and then include me .php or something like that. And then now this goes into the includes folder that is in the same folder as the originating document. But a absolute link is one that actually references completely the link that you're trying to go to, which includes HTTP colon double slash, the domain, and then the particular file. So in this way, if it was not a local link, if it was not something that could be relative, then I would change the local to be 0, and then I could define an absolute link. So let's take a look then at the index.php. So I've actually added some stuff since the last time you've seen it, but we're going to skip over all of that. And here, oh, so first I have to show you that I loaded the file. So the way that you saw in the or in the section notes is certainly valid to use the file get contents and then create the XML file. But there's actually another command in PHP that you can find on the PHPNet site called simple XML load file, which literally just kind of combines the two, and it does the same thing. It just reads the file that exists and loads it into that simple XML document, or the simple XML variable. And so you see that I have or die here, and so basically what it's saying is that if it's unable to load the pages, or die basically means that it's just going to quit. It's just going to quit the processing of the page, and that's because, unlike the theme, I really need this pages.xml to be able to determine what pages exist on, in this site, what needs to show up in the navigation bar. So we skip over all of this stuff. Now you'll see that I'm here in the navigation section, or the navigation div of this particular page. And so from here, you'll notice that there's my name, my email address, but the meat of it is right here. And so I suppose I erased all that before to write down some of the XML documents, and I forgot to do that. So I had, I had a site root element, and then within that, I had a page element that defined some data, another page element. So I had multiple page elements that defined the set of data within my site. It gets harder to write the farther down you go. So here you'll see that for each XML page, which is here, I've defined it as a pages, which is kind of confusing, but it's just to demonstrate that it's a separate, the variable actually means something different. So for every iteration of this, it's going to go through each of these pages. First, it's going to determine if the menu URL is remote or local. If it's local, it's going to append a root or a document root that I had defined earlier, just so that I'm sure that it correctly goes to the page that it needs to. And so you'll see that's exactly what it does. If pages URL, and then to reference the attribute, we use that the same thing as the referencing from an array, then it will either append or not append. And so the parentheses int beforehand, basically, like David said, there's typecasting issues in PHP. This just makes sure that it becomes an integer rather than a string. And so in this case, with an integer, if remember that the values of this were either 0 or 1. And so when it's converted to an integer, then that way a 1 will actually cause this if statement to be true, and a 0 will cause the if statement to be false. If I didn't convert it to an integer, what might happen? True. Yes, it would always, that's correct, because it would always evaluate to true, because it would think that pages URL might be a string. And in that case, if you just test, so for example, if you define a string, name it string, and put some content in it, so let's say you would put 0 in it, and then you do if string, this will actually evaluate to true because there is data in the string. It's basically just testing to see if the string is null or it is not null. In this case, it is not null, even though the content of the string is 0. So what I'm telling it to do instead is to make the string an integer. So in this case, it will evaluate to false just because it is a number. And so in computer terms, you know, the number 0 is basically false. Yes?
If you typecast Boolean in this case, would that work? If you were turning zeros and ones or no? I'm
sure if you did typecast it as a Boolean, it probably would have worked as a 0 or as a 1. But I saw from an example online that integer seemed to be reliable, and so I just decided to use integer instead. And so, again, if for whatever reason I was an idiot and put in the local attribute 2 instead of a 1 or a 0, that would still probably evaluate to true just because it is non-zero. So anyway, let's move on. So here you see that I continue to do some typecasting to convert some things to strings and to integers. So, all right. So basically, what happens in this particular site is that it knows what page to go to based on a number of things, and that is what variable is passed to, well, not a number of things, just one thing, and that is what variable is passed to it from basically a post or from a get command. And so let's take a look real quick at the site. So you'll see that up here it's whenever I change one of these, you don't see an index.php. So for example, this says csc7.org/psets. And even though this is one index.php file, how might I have done this sort of trick that exists right now?
Htaccess?
Yep, exactly. With the htaccess file, let's see if I have that. Oh, I do have that. With the htaccess file, where's my mouse? I used the mod rewrite and said that for, let's see, right here. So for a rewrite rule, everything that matches or something that doesn't exist as a file in the in my public HTML, it'll actually redirect to index.php p equals and then whatever that data was. So in this case,
does that hide the index.php ?
Yes, it does hide the index.php ? I'm not telling it to redirect. You can tell that by the options here, there's no redirection. It's basically just hiding the fact. And so even though your browser may be asking or doing another request for index.php ? P equals blank, that will actually not be seen to the user. So what I had before was this csc7.org slash psets. And what happens in mod rewrite, if I can write today, is csc7.org/index.php ? P equals psets. So now you can see how this data is being passed to the index.php file. If we were to go back, it looks to see if this variable was defined. If it is, it puts the data into that variable called page. It's here. So we can go to the very top and see that if the request is set, then I'm asking it to sanitize it, so to remove any non-alphanumeric characters, and to set the variable page to that particular variable. So with that in mind, we can go back down to our XML. We can see that if the short title matches the page name, and this is the important part, if the short title matches the page name and the pages, and it's supposed to be visible, remember from that visible attribute that was there in the element, then what it is going to do is going to say that it was found, and so that actually comes into play a little bit later. But this is where that selection comes into play. It'll actually change the class of the list item to be a selected menu item. It'll type out the title that I've typed for it, which, remember, is different from the short title because the short title is what is referenced by the HTTP request, whereas the title is what is actually printed out. And so I can have spaces here, what have you, when I cannot have spaces in the short title, and it closes the list. If it's only visible, if it's not something that matches the particular page, then it's going to just put out a regular list item. And so let's take a look. I mean, you've seen how it works, and so you can see that since we're at the problem sets, it outputted the title from that XML document, and it highlights that particular title. And so in this way, it would be very, very easy to add another page to this document just by editing that pages.xml file, adding another page, basically, if you remember, page element, and from there just continuing. So what you can tell from this is that this page is relatively simple. There's not a lot of searching that needs to go on because it makes sense for this to iterate through all of the pages that exists, that doesn't have to search for a particular thing. But there might be cases when you do need to search for something, and that is when that XPath actually becomes quite important. So let's move down a little bit. So XPath is basically just a way of querying the XML entity to find some particular set of data. So let's reproduce that that themes one that I had. So I had the themes element, and in it I had a theme with an ID, etc., and another theme. It's a lot easier when you can copy and paste. It's annoying when you have to actually write it out several times, etc. Okay. So with XPath, I could, if I wanted to, find a particular theme somewhat easily. And so it's made in, you formulate an XPath query, and it looks kind of the same as it would if you were traversing a tree, a directory tree on your computer. It uses slashes mostly just to figure it out. And so in the example used in the section notes, if we wanted to find the fish element that refers to the squid, we would use this particular path. Let's see if I can make it a little bit bigger. And that is sushi, fish, and then with the predicate, attribute name equals squid. And so if we were to scroll up a bit to the very, where we had defined this XML document, you see that the first element is sushi, the root element is sushi, the child from that is fish, and there is one that has an attribute of name called squid. And so you can just build XPath queries very, very easily from that. So you can imagine that from this, we could find the ID that was zero just by doing themes. So for example, how would we do this? It would be themes, and then theme, and then you would have to do with a predicate, you'd have to test for the ID. But again, I'm getting ahead of myself. So let's move down a little bit back to this XPath query. So what this actually returns is the elements, or all of the elements that match this particular query. So in this case, it would have matched that fish element, and that all of the data within that fish element whose attribute name matches that of squid. And so it's said the same way, but in other words, on the section notes. And so that's one of the reasons why I recommend that you do take a quick read of this. And so the way that you initiate an XPath query is just to use this very simple command, the XML arrow XPath, and from within that, you type out your XPath query. And so this way, it's very, very easy to return elements that match some particular set of or just that match a particular set of arguments. Yes?
When you say it's very easy, the whole XML file is already in memory, mm-hmm. so it's easy for us to not have to write the loop, but
right.
it's looping through the whole file. It's
so
finding the first match, it's finding all matches.
Right, so it's not clear exactly how they are doing it. They may not, they may represent it differently in memory such that they could find it more quickly. I'm not sure. I don't know how it works behind the scenes, but it certainly is possible that it does use something similar to for each.
But it does find all matches. There happens to be only one, but not just the first match.
Yes, it does find all matches. That's correct.
And
yeah.
So it has to look at the whole thing.
So yes, it would have to look at the whole thing, presumably. Yes, that's right. So technically, you could replicate all of this XPath query ID just with for each loops, just by iterating through. But again, it's a matter of how much effort you want to put into it, how many for each loops do you want to do. And so this is a very, very simple XPath query, but you can build more complex queries that return data that would be very difficult to do, or not difficult maybe, but at least a little bit more difficult to do in an iterated loop. Okay, so here, So this is an XPath query that goes down, and once it actually finds, it matches some query based on the attribute here, and then it goes further down and finds variations, or the two variations that exist for this particular fish. And remember, so it's only going to match the fish that's name is squid, so it's not going to return the data from the tuna, the fish element tuna, and it will return the variations from there. And so if we were to use XPath, then it might be a little bit easier in this case for me to put my ID into as an attribute of the theme, and then that way I'd be much more easily able to find the theme that has a particular ID, so ID of 0, for example. And so that's only if, though, I had made this ID my attribute rather than making it a separate element. But in the case of what I did, where I just dumped all of this data into a session variable, it was easier for me not to do it this way since I didn't implement XPath in my code. Okay.
I have a question for
sure.
Squid variations here. How is it? What will it output when you have that? Because it's not referring to a specific variation.
So what is okay? So it's not right. It's not referring to a particular variation. So what is it outputting? So in this case, it's not actually outputting anything. It's a bit of semantic, and I think what you mean what is it returning? And in this case, it's returning. In the style of the simple XML element, it is returning a simple XML element of the two variations. So we can actually emulate.
So
somebody say something?
Both of those variations, like you say, that memory and that object.
Yes, so now in the squid variations variable, squid variations, it's going to, in memory, look. So remember that a simple XML document looks like this, the simple XML object, that is. So we can do it ourselves. So remember that the XPath query was squid, fish with the predicate name of squid. Did I say that wrong? Sushi, I'm sorry, not squid. So the root element was sushi, and then fish with the predicate name of squid, then variations, and then variation. So it returns the two variation names. So basically, in XML terms of what, or an XML representation of what is happening in memory, it says variation name equals with wasabi, etc., etc., for that variation. And then we also have the other variation.
And it'll hold the price as well?
Yes, it'll hold the children elements as well. So if there's, in this case, there's only one child, but it could be further nested. Children, there could be children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, etc., and it will hold all of that data. None of that data will be destroyed. So in that case, then, how could you refer to the price of the variation name with wasabi from this particular variable? Remember how we referred to XML in these variables before? It was with that arrow. So how would we echo out the price of this?
Just the first one?
Yeah, just the first one. You don't have to do a loop. No loop. So you can do echo, and then you would have squid variations.
Square brackets?
Square brackets.
Yep, so the first one, and then arrow price. Right, exactly right. In this case, though, you would have to know that with wasabi was the zeroth element. If you wanted to figure it out more easily, then in this case you could use another XPath query, or you could that XPath query that you had, you could change it to represent this data that you wanted. Yes.
What if you want to output everything? Is there any way to?
What do you mean output everything?
Every text, every element.
If you just want to show all of this data, so if you just want to see how it is. So if you mean like in this representation, how do you print it out like this? Well, since it's stored in memory, I think, Cato, is it wrong? Is it with the printr command? I think since it's stored as an array, you should be able to do printr and then the variable name. So let's just call it XML, for example. Or no, I guess in this case it was called squid. And then with that, it would, with this command, it would actually output all of this. But generally, you don't want people to see all of this stuff. It's kind of messy, and it's not. Usually, you want to find each of the data and change it so that it looks like you want it to look. So
just output all the child, every child.
Oh, from every. So you just want to output every child. Well, you would use a for each loop in that case, and then you would have to iterate through each of the children and print out that data. So let's see. So like, for example, here with that squid variations, instead of just echoing out one, you could just use a for each loop, iterate through the squid variations as a variation, and then print out not only the name, but also the price. And so that would output, since there are two variations, squid with wasabi costs $8.50, squid whole costs that much. Is your question? Yeah.
Could you use XPath to get the $12.20 price?
Could you use XPath to get the $12.20 price?
That's not
yes.
An attribute. Could you show us how
that's done? Oh, so, okay. Yeah. So, let's see. You would have to... So let's build this together. So if we want to get this price that's $12.20, and this is our data set, how would we create an XPath query that would return the price of the whole variation from squid? So we have our slash first, then what? So our root element, remember, is what? Sushi. So we got to do this quick because we're running out of tape time. Then a slash, then what? Fish. Help me out here.
And in brackets.
Yep, bracket.
Bracket, single quote, squid, single quote.
So don't forget the attribute. Attribute.
Name.
Yep, name equals squid. So now with the predicate we've matched, we've narrowed it down to this. So now what else do we got to keep going. Okay, variations. Variation.
And with the name equals whole again?
Yep. Again, with the predicate at name equals, and then it's whole, I think. And then you would output the price at the very end. And with this way, even though this is complex, you've actually narrowed it down very, very quickly without having to use for loops and such to get the price of that variation. So. There's a lot of documentation on XPath online. Project One has a list of the W3 schools. PHP.net also has some XPath functions. So I do recommend that you take a look at that stuff and teach not only, well, just learn a little bit more about it. And if you have questions, of course, you can give us a ring on email or in the forums. Okay. So when we come back in just a few minutes, Cato will talk about sessions, and hopefully we'll demystify a lot of this stuff that maybe may have questions about.
So welcome to the second part of the section. We'll be covering sessions instead of XML now. And if you've noticed at all, you'll see that HTTP is what's called a stateless protocol. And this means that it doesn't maintain a state. So every request to an HTTP server is different from every other request. And for example, if you tell a PHP script in one request that your name is, say, Dan, in another request to the server, the server will no longer know that your name is Dan, because these two requests are considered separate. And so every request, if you want to submit some data to a PHP script, for every request, you have to send that data again, because the server does not save anything on its side by default. So we have something called sessions, and this is something that PHP supports, and it's used in combination with cookies. You've undoubtedly heard about cookies, I think. And do you know what cookies are used for? Any guesses?
Saving states.
Saving states. Yes, that is the entire point of this section. It's also used, for example, in some cases for advertising. Some websites track which websites a user has been to, and stores this in its own big database. And the thing to remember here is that what's saved on the computer on the user's computer is a simple, is a very small text file called a cookie. And this cookie usually contains a large random number. It doesn't contain something like the name of the user or which websites he or she has been to. It simply contains this random number that identifies the user in question. And the data about this user is stored on the server. So I think someone in lecture pointed out this week, but there's no problem of users faking their cookies in this way, because you have to go through a very large number of large random numbers to get to another person's information. So we're going to, in project one, we're using sessions to implement a shopping cart for the Three Aces website. And let's see. I've actually whipped up a version of Project 1 yesterday, and it's available at... we go to... So I call my version pizzaml. This is what you'll be implementing. As this note says, it's only an example, and it doesn't cover... it doesn't fulfill all the requirements, so I don't want you to go and copy this, because it is a terrible example of a project one. So let's go to, say, pizzas. And this interface also is something I whipped up in a few minutes, and it's not something that I would recommend. But let's say I want to buy a large onion pizza, and click buy this. So it says, thank you for wanting a large onions, which is slightly incorrect. But so now you've seen that the data that I sent from the previous page, which was I want to buy a large onion pizza, has been transferred to this add to cart page. Now, are there any questions about this? Because this is simply the post request that we were talking about last week. It's nothing new, right? So now, if this part is new, if we go to cart, now what would you expect to see if I clicked on go to cart? What would you see on, say, Amazon?
Well, a large onion pizza.
Yeah, a large onion pizza. Yeah, in the cart, right? So we click it, and we see just that. We see the cart here, and we see that our large onion pizza has been saved. Now, you may say, maybe I'm just passing all the data in a post request. Maybe I'm not doing anything special. But if we go back to the top of the page, the site, and we buy something else, say a chicken cob wrap for $4.95, buy this, go to cart, we see that the second item I added to the cart, chicken cob, has also been added. So obviously there's something else going on. It's not just the get request or the post request, and I'm saving the data somehow. I'm actually using sessions here, and we'll be seeing what sessions can do for your project and for any websites that you create. So now I want to create a simple example of sessions first. So let's say I'm going to skip all the semantics here. I don't know. A shopping cart is a bit complex at first. So what do you first want to save? Like on a website, what would you first want to save?
That's about. A good question.
Mm-hmm. That's a mistake. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. I can't actually see the screen. Is that right? Yeah. So,
do you want to enlarge it?
I think I should. So, what do you want? What did you say?
The IP.
The IP address. Yeah. Yes. Is there something more human that we could store, perhaps? Like, could we get some? Yeah, the name. Yeah, the IP address is good, but it's also, you're often saved in websites, but let's just say we want to save the name for now. So we'll enlarge this. Can you see? Or should it be? Okay. So now we're going to write a form here that saves the name of a person, that actually gets the name of a person. Um, So now, by now, you're used to all this form stuff, I think. Okay, so I'm going to save this in... So this is now in... Now right here. So we're going to write a different page that... named tutor.php. This will get the name of this will receive the name of the user and then save it in a session. So, how can we? This is a recap from last week. How can we get the name of the user that we just got from the previous page? Remember, if we go back to the page that we were that our form was on, we're sending the data via get. And the name is name. How do we get the...
With the get variable array?
Yeah, with the get variable. So, see. So this would get the name. So now we want to store this in a cookie, in a session, so that we can use the name later on in another page of our website. The first thing that we want to do is to open a session. This is because PHP doesn't automatically open sessions. There's a configuration setting that you can change to automatically open a session. But for every page in which you want to use a session, you have to open the session first. Now, we can use this with this very aptly named function called sessionOpen. It doesn't take any parameters. You just do sessionOpen.
Do you mean to have the closing form tag there?
No, I did not. Thank you. Okay. So now what we want to do is to store this name in the session. We can do this using this using one of PHP's superglobals. We saw in the first week of lecture that there was get, there was post, there was server, there was cookie, and now we have session. This is it's got the same $_ thing as all the other get and post variables. It's called $_session. And this is basically a an array of any data that you may want to store. You can, in this $session array, you can store, for example, strings, integers, you can even store XML, you can store PHP objects if you're into that. You can store anything in this $session array. It's an associative array, so you can name your data anything you want. So for this example, we'll be naming our portion of the session array name, and we'll simply plug the get variable in. And that's it. This is your first session. Already in this session that we've opened, the name of the user, which we got from the previous page, is now stored in the $session name variable. And just to prove that, we're going to create a new page that that doesn't receive any input at all, but happens to know this person's name. So we're going to... what do we have to do here? If we're going to access the same session. Yes, session open. Yes?
Can we have multiple sessions?
It's on the same server.
Like session one, session two.
Yes, using a function called session name, it's possible to have multiple sessions open, and you may have to use it if you say you're using a form script and a chat script or whatever. If you're using two scripts, you'll have to use session name. So here we have session open, and as long as it's on the same server, this session without any other functions will refer to the same session. It's by default, it's called PHP sessid. So we have our simple HTML page here. And we can recover the contents of the session variable just as easily as we saved it into the session variable. And we can do now, this simply echoes out, hello, name. And just to prove that this works, we'll save this as name3.php. And OK, so if you recall, this this first page that we created is simply a form that goes to name2.php, which stores the name in the session variable. And let's see. So if we type in, say, Dan here, and submit query, whoops. Full-time undefined function. Did I spell it incorrectly?
I think you had a second PHP at the end of your name to file name.
Oh, did I? Oh, no, I changed that. Okay. It should be.
Did you see? Maybe because his session start?
Sorry, yeah, session start. I made the same mistake yesterday while writing section notes, yes. Sorry. I'm very sorry about that. It's the correct function name is session start, and that's why it wasn't highlighting. Okay. So, okay, so now we're going to resend. And now if the name2.php file should have saved the name in the session variable. So if we go back to name3.php, correcting my very embarrassing mistake. Now if we browse to name3.php, it should still have the name that we saved in name2.php. So if we go there, yeah, hello Dan. Our session works. Sessions are very easy in PHP because we have the session start function and the $session superglobal. And as I said, you can store anything in the session superglobal. You may store, for example, store arrays in the session superglobal, so you have an array inside an array, as if it were, and you can store anything. Like so, if you, for example, if you find in your project one that you want to store several pieces of data, such as like the item name, the price, and the quantity, if you want to store these three data, you don't need to go through saying $session item, $session quantity, $session price. You can simply do $session my array, array something. So anything that you can represent in PHP, except for a few exceptions, you can store in the $session superglobal. You had a question back there?
So a session only lasts as long as the browser is open. Is that correct?
By default, yes.
So can you define a longer period of time for it?
Yes. Let's see. If you go to the PHP manual. You'll see that there are several functions related to sessions, and one of them is. So I can't remember it off the top of my head. Does anyone know which function it was? Okay, so set cookie parameters. This function will allow you to set the lifetime of the session.
So is that how like Gmail does it, or
yeah? I don't think they use PHP, but you can certainly emulate that kind of session saving that way.
But how does that random number come into play when I come in through the browser a day later?
Okay, so the list of big random numbers and their associated data is kept on the server. It's kept in an arcane location on the server.
Oh, right, it's kept on a cookie on the client. So.
Yeah, the big random number is kept on the browser, and everything, all the data is located on the server.
I was thinking that random number had disappeared. And I was
wondering. Oh, okay, right. No, it doesn't disappear because it's kept in the browser. Yeah. So,
Wait, I'm sorry. I want to make sure I'm clear on this. Mm-hmm. So a session lasts as long as the browser is open, mm-hmm. but the session data is being stored in some, not in any specific file, but it's being stored on the server.
That's right, yes.
Okay, so But when you close a browser, the server doesn't know you've closed your browser.
No.
So the server must have some sort of additional like timeout, right?
For the data to get deleted?
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. It's typically several days or a few weeks. And a script just goes through and deletes all the old data. Yeah. Do you have a question? Yes?
Yeah, I have a question. You have in file 2, you have session name equals get name.
Mm-hmm.
And then in file 3, you have the same thing.
Right.
So why do you have to do that twice?
Oh, in name 2.php, we're setting the session name, right?
Okay.
And in name 3.php, instead we're getting the session name.
I see.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay. So now this isn't a very interesting example of sessions. Let's go back to our shopping cart example, because it's more related to Project One and what you'll be doing. Because if you've read over, how many of you have read over Project One? Yep. So if you read over Project One, you'll see that we need to implement a shopping cart for Three Aces Pizza chain. And there's a simpler version of the shopping cart that I made accessible from the website. It's example shopping cart. And now this isn't a terribly useful example either, because it asks the user for the cost, and that's not something that you'd want to do in an actual shopping cart. But thanks. It basically does the same thing as the simple PHP functions that we wrote a few minutes ago. And if I type in, say, what do you want to buy? I don't know, what do you want to buy?
Course notes.
Okay, course notes. How much does it cost?
$100.
How many do you want to buy?
One.
Okay. So if we do add to cart, it's basically the same script. So we have the same cart that we have. So now let's look through the source code of this simple shopping cart to see what it's doing differently, if any. Okay, so it's a bit too big. This is let's go to the index page. Is it too big? Okay. So now if you've read the Project One specifications, you'll realize that some functions related to the shopping cart are necessary. One of them is adding to the shopping cart. Another is deleting from the shopping cart. And another is changing the quantities of the items in the shopping cart. And if you look at the specifications, you'll see that David has put in a few requirements, such as that you must not be able to specify a negative number of items to buy, so that the pizza chain owes you something rather than you owing them something. In this simple example, which is available on the course website, along with the source code of this shopping cart example, is also available on the website via the same sections page. It's right here, source index. If you go to this, you'll be able to see this shopping cart example that I will talk about. And you can look at it and use it as a reference for your own shopping cart example. I mean, not your shopping cart example, your project one. You'll find that you'll have to implement far more features than I have, because I've deliberately not implemented, say, delete and change quantity in this. But anyway, let's go back to the actual source code. And now you'll see that this index page here does the same thing that the previous example did, except it has a few more elements. It has the it asks for the item and the price and the quantity. Now in your real project one, you'll be reading in the data from XML, and you'll be browsing into the specific categories such as pizza or wraps, and from there you'll use some kind of mechanism in PHP to send the data to the next page. You won't be using these simple text boxes. But this is index.php, and okay, so the next page, the page that this index.php page sends its data to is add.php. And this is basically very similar to the name2.php file that we had earlier on. The first thing that I'm doing here is checking that all the required fields have been filled out. We don't want to continue with our processing if, say, the item or the price or the quantity isn't filled out, right? So can anyone tell me what the empty function does? It's very useful. It checks to see if the contents of, say, empty post price is empty. And if it is empty, it'll return a Boolean value of true. And if not, it'll return false. Yeah. So it's very useful in this context because it's, well, obviously you want to check to see if the user actually entered anything before clicking add to cart. So if any of the required fields are empty, it'll redirect the users to the index page. And I think you've seen the redirection, the header location syntax in the previous lecture, I believe. So any questions about the top part? This is not to do with sessions, but okay. So now we get to the juicy parts. This is start the session. As we saw in the previous example, to start the session, we call session start. It's not session open, it's session start. And so now, one thing I want to point out here is that I'm calling session start before anything is written out to the browser. That is, before anything, the dot type is written, or the HTML tags, anything is written out to the browser, I have to call the session start function. Now, this is because the session start function sets some headers of its own. And if you want to set an HTTP header in PHP, you have to do it before any of your actual data, the data that you see when you go to your browser, is written out to the browser. So you'll probably, if you're like me, you'll probably run into to errors saying headers already sent at line 1500 of something.php. Now, that's when you write your session start function after any data has been sent out. So always remember to set to call session start before any data is written out, that is before the doc type. And you may also run into problems with white space in your PHP file. That is anything that is, say, a space or a tab or a new line. Any of these characters, they also count as characters. So you don't want to have, say, if we go back to the top of this page, you don't want to have a script that is like this, because all of these new lines that I've just entered, these all count as text. So the session start function won't be able to function properly if you have these white space characters at the top. So that's a common pitfall.
That's only at the top?
What do you mean?
White space and tabs.
Right.
It's only at the top.
Not necessarily at the top, but anything before session start.
Before session start.
Yeah. So after session start, you can have anything you want.
Okay.
Yeah. So if we go into if you go further, remember this is add.php. We're getting the required fields from the post variable, and here this is what I was talking about earlier on. And we define an associative array. Can anyone tell me what an associative array is?
It's accessed by content, not by an index.
Yes, that's right. So here. Have you seen this syntax before? It's a way of defining an associative array in PHP. And we first say array and then open brackets. And then we have to match that with the closed brackets here and a semicolon. We're basically saying define a new row in the array whose name is item, and give that the value of $item. So $item is defined above, as we saw right here. And unit price, the same thing. Define a row named unit price and give that the value of dollar price right there. And quantity, same thing. So this is how we define an associative array. And you'll find it very useful to package several clumps of data into an associative array. Because instead of dealing with several data elements, you'll be able to store one thing, this $orel array, as one object inside the session variable. So it's very useful in this session context.
I don't think I've ever seen the equals arrow.
operator before. What words would you put around that? Is that a glorified assignment statement?
It is sort of like a glorified assignment statement. It's used in this context of defining an associative array. And the English term, I guess, would be like item's value is dollar item, or unit price's value is dollar price. So this may be a new syntax, but it's very useful. So I would keep it in mind. And there's also another way of doing it without using associative arrays, and that is using PHP classes. And I don't know how many of you may have an object-oriented programming background, but who here has experience with an object-oriented program? Oh, okay, so many of you have. So if you do have experience with an object-oriented programming background, or even if you don't, you may want to look up PHP classes, and the URL was listed on the lecture notes for this week, and it's on the PHP website. And to add to that, instead of adding the associative array to the session variable, you can define a PHP class, assign variables to it, and then you can assign the PHP object to the session variable instead of appending the associative array. So I got a little ahead of myself there, but here we are defining the cart portion of the session array. And as I mentioned in the previous example, $session is an associative array itself. So we can define a new element here called cart in the session variable. And what I'm doing here is using the not is set function. The exclamation mark is negation. So is set is if it is defined. If the $session cart, if the cart row of the session variable is not defined, then assign an empty array to session cart. Does everyone get this?
Singleton pattern, saying like you make sure there is only one instance.
Right. Yeah. You're also making sure that there is an instance, because if a user came here without looking at any of the previous pages, if they went straight to add.php, then they would have an empty session variable, so they wouldn't have any of this. So this would evaluate to true. It wouldn't be set. So yeah. And this is basically an initialization of the cart array. And if we go down, basically what we're doing here is, this might also be a new syntax, but as I've explained here, an array with this open square brackets and immediately closed square brackets means append a new item to the end of this array. So what we're doing here is, because we defined this to be an empty array, we're appending this to the end of this array. So basically we have a cart and we have rows of items that we've added to the cart. So we're basically adding something to the end of that cart. Yes? $oral is the associative array that we defined here, containing the particulars of that particular item that we just added. Is that it?
Yeah.
Okay. So Oral. it was late at night, and it is arbitrary, and I think it actually used to mean order element, so it's I should have named it something else. Sorry. Basically we've just appended this oral array, which is this associative array, to the cart associative array. And in the same way that we could store the name in the previous example, we've stored the entire contents of the cart in the session variable. So if we go to another page, we should be able to retrieve those items from the cart, right? Yes.
What if two users are trying to order at one time?
Oh.
Is set statement return false? I mean, wouldn't there have to be another cart?
Yes, there are. Each user has their own cart. And because this is because each browser has its own cart, because a new large random number is assigned to every user and every browser that goes to this PHP page without having a previous session.
And I
that's just sort of handled behind the scenes. You don't have to include looking for that number in your code.
That's right, yeah. So if you want to, you can access the ID yourself manually through PHP, but PHP usually handles this automatically for you, and there's nothing you need to worry about multiple users or multiple browsers.
So in other words, if you didn't have some kind of login ID for this site, mm-hmm. you open a new window, you could have a whole separate cart.
Right. Not a new window in the same browser, but a different browser. Say if I open Firefox and Safari, I could have two baskets. Yeah. Yes?
I have a question about, it's a sort of a syntax thing in PHP, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Your if statement there, you don't have any curly braces?
Right,
is
yes.
Is that a shortcut in PHP that you don't have to include them?
Yes, it's a shortcut in many languages like C and PHP. It basically means when you have curly braces, anything inside of it is treated as one code block. But in this case, only this is treated as one code block, so the if statement applies only to this line.
And does that only work because it is only a single line?
Yeah, it only works because it's a single line. Yes?
So the color underscore session line that is executed if mm-hmm. the if closes false, is it correct?
If this is executed if is set is false.
No, the next line.
This next line? Oh, yes, this is...
No, under...
Sorry, this one?
Yeah, that one. So that one is executed only if that... If...
No, the absence of the braces means that this if statement applies only to its next line. So if we had curly braces here, and we had it end here, then it would apply only if the if statement was true.
So the next line would be executed only if the cart is not set. No, the cart is already set. Is it right?
Sorry, this line?
No.
This line?
Yeah.
This line is executed whatever the circumstances are. Because the if statement applies only to the next line because it has no curly braces.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so.
So if we... So usually you would... Usually or maybe in many cases you would put this, right? So this would apply only to this thing would these curly braces apply to the if statement would apply to anything inside the curly braces and only the curly braces. Now this is because the curly braces, everything inside the curly braces is treated as say one line. It's not a correct metaphor, but everything inside the curly braces is treated as one thing. So now if we remove these curly braces, only this is treated as one thing. Nothing else is treated as so. The if statement only applies to one thing. In this case, it's applying to everything inside the curly braces. Now, if we remove the curly braces, if we remove the curly braces, it's still only applying to this line.
So what is happening there is that you're actually initializing an array if user gets to that page without going through the previous.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, if the session cart variable isn't defined, then it's being initialized to be an empty array. So now, if we go to the next page, which is the cart page, here we can see that I'm starting the session again. Because we want to refer to the same session, so we get access to the same $session, the same copy of the session variable that we just used in add.php. And right here, if you want to go back later, I've put some comments in the source code, so you can follow through. But basically, add.php defined session cart as an associative array. So here, what I'm doing here is, if not is set $session cart. This is the same code that we had in add.php. It's basically checking if the cart variable is set or not. And if it won't be set if the user came straight to the shopping cart, but it will be set if the user came from add.php. Is that okay? And this count $session cart. Count is a built-in PHP function that counts the number of rows in an array. So if we do count $session cart, if we added, say, one large onion pizza, it would have this count function would return one, right? And if we added two items, it would return two. So basically, this is it's just counting the number of elements in an array. And what I'm doing here is, if the cart variable is not set, or if the cart is empty, if there are zero items in the cart, this is when this actually doesn't happen in this script, because there's no delete function. It's either set or you have items in the cart. But anyway, if any of these are true, then it says your cart is woefully empty. And if else, like if there are any items in the cart, then we print out the items that are currently in the cart. And what do we see here? We see the for each construct, our old friend from XML. For each is basically an iteration that goes through each of the items in an array. And as we see here, it's going through the $sessionCart variable. If we remember, it's an associative array. We're going through each of those rows, calling each of those rows $item temporarily. And we can, as if we recall, the format of the item associative array is contains the elements unit price, quantity, and item. Do you all follow with that? In add.php, we defined the oral associative array to be this, right? Yes?
Could you go back to the table definition in the for each loop?
Yes.
Down in the bottom where you do the TVs, what is the first dollar sign on that line?
This one?
It's a dollar sign character.
Yeah, it's like $50.
That was another funky syntax.
Oh, no. The backslash here is an escape sequence, so PHP doesn't treat it as a, yeah. So if you want to actually write a dollar sign in double quotes, you have to use an escape character, because dollar on itself would be treated as defining a variable, right? Because usually you would write, for example, dollar item. Instead, it's actually a dollar sign right here. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
So in that echo statement,
yes.
The curly braces around your variables, those are necessary for those to be output correctly?
Yes. When you're using associative arrays and when you have these square brackets, you can't just type dollar item unit price, because it's very... PHP would think that you're referring to the item variable and would ignore this. It would think this is just part of the string. So, yeah, this is also a new piece of syntax. But if you want to refer to an associative array, you must put double quotes. And this only... not double quotes, curly braces. And this only works inside a double quote. Sorry, it's all confusing. But... yes. Oh, and one more thing. You can also use these curly braces even around single variables, like even variables that don't refer to an associative array. You can, for example, put I don't know, if we had a variable named $name, we could put curly braces around it and say $name, and it would do the same thing. These are just optional when you're using single non-associative array variables. Do you have a question? Oh, okay. And so this is fairly simple, right? We have the $item temporary variable, and we're getting the name of the item here, and we're printing out the unit price, which we got from add.php. And here we're doing some math. It's very simple. It's just multiplying the unit price by the quantity. And it's this is just a subtotal of the current product. And what we're doing here is, if you see here, we set a new variable called total to 0. And why we do this is because we want to calculate the grand total of the shopping cart. So here we're doing $total plus equals. Can anyone tell me what plus equals means?
Addition.
Yes, addition. It's addition. It's equal to, this statement is equal to $total plus $total, $total equals $total plus something. Yeah. So this is a handy shortcut when you want to increment something by something. So basically, we're adding this new subtotal. It's the same thing as this one, to the grand total, which is stored in total. And we're printing that out here. This looks funky, but it's just the escape dollar and the total variable. Yeah. So it's it basically prints out the grand total. And you'll want to do this in your shopping cart for two reasons. For aesthetic reasons, you want to show the user how much he or she has bought. And you also want to send it as an email, if you look at the specifications, to 3aces and yourself. You don't really want to send it to 3aces for the project one, yeah, because that would be a nuisance. Yes?
So again, why do you use curly braces in the beginning and then no curly braces to it seems as if you're accessing the same information.
Mm-hmm.
So why are you using curly braces one time and not another?
Sorry, where am I not using?
In the beginning there, it says item, curly braces.
Oh, right here.
Yeah, there and then up at the top as well. You're kind of...
Right, yeah.
Yeah, why are you using curly braces up there, mm-hmm. but then not curly braces down there?
Yeah, that's because these curly braces are for escaping from the double quotes.
I see.
They're used only for... they're only for use in the double quotes. For single quotes, you can't do this kind of thing, because single quotes in PHP are literal strings. They're actually just strings that you can't put in variables and stuff. Yes.
So if I'm printing out information, I have to use mm-hmm. the curly braces. Like if I'm outputting it to the screen, I have to use the curly braces. But if I'm just using it to calculate something, I don't need those.
That's exactly right. If you don't, if you're just using the variable, then you don't need the curly braces. In fact, you can't use the curly braces because they mean something completely different in outside of the double quote context. So does anyone have any questions about the shopping cart example? Yes.
Mm-hmm. How are you able to get away with using the item variable? It sounds like you're using it twice almost, because you have it in the for each as the item, and then you also have it up above. Do they have to be the same? Like, why couldn't you say session cart as and then some other variable you haven't used already?
It could be anything else. It could be any name. You just have to change these to be the same name.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if they are the same name mm-hmm. that you've already used, how are you able to get away with that?
I'm not actually using $item in this page. Are you referring to add.php? Actually, I'm not using $item anywhere else.
Or... But if you go up to the array when you said oral,
mm-hmm.
there was...
Let me get back to add.php. Do you mean here?
Right.
Oh, right, yeah. This is a different page. It's add.php. So it runs in a completely different context from cart.php.
Okay. Okay.
So yeah. The names don't have to match because the names don't matter anymore, because the only thing that matters is the $session variable and its and the name of the cart, which is cart. So yeah. Yes?
We use echo to embed XHTML.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, right there you have echo and you have header one, mm-hmm. semicolon, and you use another echo. Is that just stylistic that you have two of those? Could you use one echo for both of those?
Right, I could have used just one of those. Why I wanted to write two echoes here is because you see here I'm using $item. I can't do this in a single quote, right? Well, actually, that doesn't explain. Sorry, I could have just started the double quote here and then chopped those two characters off and then chopped that off, and then it'll be the same thing. Yeah. So it's just a stylistic thing. It's probably because I removed some code inside, or yeah, something. You could also, of course, close the PHP tags here, and then just do that in plain HTML. Like, you can't do this in plain HTML, but you can do this in plain HTML. You can just close the PHP tag here, and then start the PHP tag, and then this whole line will be treated as XHTML rather than PHP. Are there any more questions? Is the shopping cart very clear? Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's see. I mentioned PHP classes, and we have a few more minutes left. So let's go back to my implementation of this class. Sorry. So yes, this is a very simple example of a PHP class that I used to implement my pizza ML example that's on my website. If you see here, basically this is defining a class called order element, And if you go back to the shopping cart example, it's just defining one row of each of your shopping cart. For example, what you can say it's in the pizzas category. It's an onion pizza and it's large and its unit price is $5 and its quantity I want one. So this is basically just packaging all that data into one thing called a class, and it's basically in this kind of context it's very similar to an associative array and it performs in a very similar manner. Yes.
So here you're basically just defining all the variables that go inside an order.
The order doesn't really matter because you can refer to them in any manner you want.
Okay, but because you're calling them public, you can basically add to those variables from the outside.
Right. Yes. There are also some other keywords like private or protected, which are other ways which define how much other classes and functions outside of the class can refer to these variables. But in this case, we're defining them as public, so anything outside of the class can refer to these variables.
How do you reference?
Yes, I'm just about to get to that. Do you have a question?
No.
Okay. So now inside this class, outside of this class, we can create a new order element by saying, let's say, we're defining a new variable called myOrderElement. We can say new order element. Now this defines, if you're from an object-oriented programming background, you'll probably recognize the new constructor. It constructs a new object called order element because there can be multiple order elements and you put each of these in a variable, in a variable of its own. So basically this constructs a new order element and puts the reference to that object in my order element. So now we can refer to the objects inside my order element by using this hyphen and square bracket. That's not a square bracket. What do you call it? Is it a square bracket?
Angle bracket,
yes, thank you. You can say, for example, category equals pizzas. Here we're referring to the category variable that's inside my order element, and we're setting that to pizzas. Okay. We can also read from these variables by simply doing the same, my order element category, and notice that if we say my new order element. We define a new order element here. We can say my new order element has a category of wraps. And we do the same thing. My new order element category category. And this will output wraps. It won't output pizzas because these two are separate objects. Let's think of them as buckets. We have a bucket of data here called my order element, and we have another bucket of data called my new order element. And this bucket has pizzas, but this bucket has wraps. They're completely different buckets, and we're creating new buckets by using this new construct. Yes?
So does category have a type before you've given it a value?
In PHP, these don't have types. You can specify types, but these are just random PHP variables that don't have types.
So for your my new order element, mm-hmm. you could have made category equals and then put an array there.
Right, yeah. Okay. You could do that.
You have to figure out how to deal with those two different types.
There's a function called isArray, and you can find out if it's an array, but it gets complicated if you do that. Yes?
So you can define methods inside a class too, right?
Yes, you can define methods inside a class. But for this project, I don't think you'll need to do that. But you can look that up in the PHP manual. Yeah, it's very simple. It's just instead of writing public or something, writing these variables, you just do function my new function. Yeah, it's just like that, and you can define anything here, and you can refer to the variables inside of the class as this category. This is a special variable that refers to the object itself, and it's used inside inside functions that are inside the class. But this is something that you won't need to worry about for project one, but maybe for future projects, you may want to look it up in the PHP manual. There's a very good section. It's very long, but it's very good. So, yeah. Did you have a question? Back?
Yeah, so why? If you did my order element and then my new order element, mm-hmm. why do you need to use equals new to get a new bucket? Am I confusing two things?
My order element is one bucket, okay. So we created a new element called a new order element called my order element here, okay. And here we create a new bucket. We make one from scratch that's called my new order element. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying in this example is that we can have two buckets that are both of type order element, that both have this as their properties, but still have them as different instances of instances that don't conflict with each other.
So that's what equals new is doing?
Yeah, equals new is creating a new order element.
Okay,
yeah.
Right, I see.
Okay, so are there any other questions about these classes? Any questions? Yes?
We can have these in a different file and just include them, like in
right.
C++?
Yeah, usually in PHP as well as in C++, you would create a class, you would create a separate file for the class, and that's why my file is called orderElement.class.php. Okay. Yeah. The file name doesn't matter, but it can be in a completely different file.
Just include it. Right?
Just include it, yeah. Yeah. Yes?
Can you define a static method inside of a PHP 5?
Yes, you can define a static method inside PHP 5 using PHP 5. It's just a static keyword. Yeah. Are there any other questions? Yes?
So you can hold the menu data in an XML file, for example. Can you plug that into that PHP file so that you can use it? Or
yes, that you'll work on that for project one. And you can define, you won't be using classes directly with XML, but you will be putting, you might be using classes to define your shopping cart. Okay, so we're running out of tape, so thank you very much. And if you have any questions, I'll stick around for a few minutes. Yep. So thank you very much.